Amateur Radio Newsline Report Number 1801, with a release date of February 17, 2012, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. WRC 2012 ends and ham radio gets a new 600-meter allocation. Also, the 2 gigahertz band comes under attack in Sweden. Ham radio gets an exclusion from a proposed Illinois distracted driving law. A high-altitude ham radio balloon heading from Texas to China disappears over the Gulf of Mexico. And spray-on antennas become a reality. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1801 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now from Charleston, West Virginia, with Jim Dameron, NATMW. I'm Jeff Clark, K8JAC. The 2012 World Radio Communications Conference, better known as WRC-12, has come to a close. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with some good news for ham radio.
At this plenary meeting held on February 14th, the World Radio Communications Conference approved a new secondary frequency allocation to the amateur radio service from 472 to 479 kilohertz. Having passed its first and second readings, it is normally a formality that this change be included in the conference final acts when the gathering concludes. The table of frequency allocations would then be amended accordingly. As a secondary user, amateur radio shares 472 to 479 kilohertz with Maritime Mobile Service Operations, which is the primary user in all three ITU regions. It also shares with the Aeronautical Radio Navigation Service, which is a secondary user, except as noted in the following footnotes. Footnote I reads that a number of countries will identify their intent to elevate the status of Aeronautical Radio Navigation Service to primary as a step to ensuring protection from secondary users. Also, there is a footnote that says that the power which amateur radio operators may use in 472 to 479 kilohertz will be limited to 5 watts effective radiated for amateur stations within 800 kilometers of the border of a number of countries. These are principally Russia, many of the former Soviet bloc nations, and the Arab states. For those affected amateurs, the power limit will be only 1 watt. It is, of course, up to the individual administrations to authorize use of the band by their radio amateur communities. So how long will it be before this band is available to hams in the United States? That's up to the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. How long that will take is unknown. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. I'm in the newsroom in Los Angeles.
The new band at 600 meters will represent the return of amateurs to the medium waves. This is an area of spectrum that hams have not had access to since the earliest days of radio regulation. More on WRC-12 in future Amateur Radio Newsline reports.
The 13-centimeter band is under threat of reallocation in Sweden. This as that nation's telecommunications regulator, the Department of Post and Telecommunications, has suggested that the 2300 to 2400 megahertz spectrum be transferred for use by broadband systems. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Butera-Howell, KB3-TZD, is here with the details.
As part of the rulemaking process, the Swedish National Amateur Radio Society, the SSA, has submitted its response to Sweden's telecommunications regulator on this matter. In it, the SSA argues that the nation's amateur service should remain in the 2.3 GHz band and, if needed, share this spectrum with any other users. SSA notes that wideband digital systems are becoming less sensitive to narrowband signals. This, it says, improves the possibilities for such a form of band-sharing agreement. Among its position points, the SSA believes that communication with amateur satellites in the band from 2400 to 2450 megahertz should continue to be permitted. The SSA is also requesting a meeting with the Department of Post and Telecommunications to discuss the technological basis for continuing the amateur service in this band. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Butera-Howell, KB3-TZD, near Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
More on the amateur radio response to the proposed reallocation, translated into Google English, is online at tinyurl.com/ssa2300mhz response. And that is all spelled as one word.
Communications with a high-altitude amateur radio floating balloon that was launched from Texas with the final goal of reaching Nanjing, China, has been lost. BLT-28, transmitting call sign KT5TK-11 on APRS, was lost at 050 hours UTC on February 12. This was only 3 hours after the balloon was lofted skyward from Katy, Texas, just west of the city of Houston. Signals were lost when the balloon was passing through 45,700 feet over the Gulf of Mexico, about 110 miles south of Holly Beach, Louisiana. This was possibly the coldest part of the journey to that time, with the last telemetry reporting a temperature of minus 50 degrees Celsius. There's some speculation that the lack of signals from the balloon may have caused the batteries freezing up. There's some hope that a so-called watchdog circuit will keep the electronics package alive until the batteries have rejuvenated, if they ever do. There was some hope that BLT-28 may have actually crossed the Atlantic Ocean sometime Monday morning, February 13, but that's yet to be confirmed either visually or by resumption of electronic tracking. If the APRS transponder does return to life, it should be transmitting on 144.800 megahertz and will eventually appear on the various worldwide APRS tracking websites, such as aprs.fi. BLT-28 was the latest in a long series of high-altitude ham radio balloon launches sponsored by South Texas Balloon Launch Team. Their website is in cyberspace at w5acm.net.
Amateur radio, as well as the 11-meter CB band and several other services, have won a complete exemption from a proposed Illinois state law aimed at curtailing the activities of distracted drivers on that state's roads and streets. Amateur Radio Newsline's Matthew Chambers, NR0Q, has this follow-up report.
There are actually two proposed measures before the Illinois state legislature aimed at accomplishing the same thing. As originally written, both House Bill 3972, introduced by Representative John D'Amico, and House Bill 3970 by Representative Karen May, would have banned the use of all electronic communication devices, with very few limited exceptions. There were the use of two-way radio by law enforcement and operators of emergency vehicles, cell phones used in hands-free or voice-activated mode, or in parked vehicles, and that was it. Now, after consultation with representatives of the Illinois ham radio community, Representative John D'Amico has amended his proposal to exclude numerous types of two-way radio-based communications from his measure. This while leaving the original intent of the proposed law aimed at curtailing texting or using a handheld cellular telephone while the vehicle is in motion. Item 7 of the amended D'Amico measure is the part that's important to the ham radio community. It states that a driver using two-way or a citizen's band radio services or two-way mobile radio transmitter or receivers for licensees of the Federal Communications Commission and the Amateur Radio Service are exempt from the proposed law. And that's good news for anyone with radio gear in their car driving in or through the state of Illinois. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Matthew Chambers, NR0Q, reporting.
While this still leaves House Bill 3970 by Representative Karen May as active as originally written, it's believed that this measure will shortly be amended to follow the House Bill 3970, if this has not taken place already. Jim Linton, VK3PC, reports that Chris Dmitrievic, VK3FY, has announced the permanent cancellation of the 2013 VK0HI Heard Island expedition. Linton notes that VK3FY was also the team leader of the canceled DX0DX Spratly Islands expedition. VK3PC was serving as the publicist for the Heard Island 2013 expedition. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W8HVG repeater serving southern Michigan. Amateur Radio Newsline's new website with its all-new look is now online and fully operational. One of the new features is that from this week forward, all newscasts will remain on the very front page as an ongoing audio and text blog. This should make it easy for those who have missed the previous week. Also, the Young Ham of the Year Award and its associated forms now have their own tab at the top of the front page. Click it, and you are at the place where you can download the 2012 nominating form, as well as learn about the award program's history. For now, if you find you're having any problems reaching the site, you can use the temporary URL of arnewsline.squarespace.com. This is because it may take up to a week before all the domain name servers around the world have updated www.arnewsline.org to the new host. Lots more changes will be coming soon to make the overall site easier to navigate. Our thanks to Robert Sudock, WB6FDF, Kevin Trotman, N5PRE, and Dale Carey, WD0AKO, for spearheading the new design and for the smooth transition to our new web host, Squarespace. Please check www.arnewsline.org. Let us know what you think.
The Federal Communications Commission says it'll seek public comment on revoking LightSquared's permit to build a proposed national high-speed wireless data network. This is after concluding that such a system held the potential in some cases to jam personal navigation and other global positioning system or GPS devices. According to news reports, the FCC had seen LightSquared's proposal as a way to make more spectrum available to feed the need of the public and industry for added broadband capability for a wide variety of fixed and mobile devices. But the manufacturers of GPS receivers and those who rely on them feared that GPS signals would suffer from adjacent spectrum interference caused by the proposed LightSquared network. As previously reported here on Newsline, after conducting tests, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration said that it found interference with dozens of personal navigation devices and aircraft control systems that rely on GPS for positioning. The NTIA concluded there's no way to eliminate the risk of interference with such GPS devices. So as we go to air, LightSquared, which is based in Reston, Virginia, had not made any comment to the press on this latest development.
The FCC has reduced a fine for Gila Electronics that was based on a studio-to-transmitter link violation 2 years ago. Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Davis, W2JKD, reports.
During a September 2009 inspection of KUKY-FM, located in Welton, Arizona, agents discovered what appeared to be a 950 megahertz studio-to-transmitter, or STL, that was relaying KUKY programming's main studio in Yuma to its transmitter site near Welton. Now, Gila provided the agents with a copy of the license for the relay station, which authorized operations on 956.65 megahertz as a private operational fixed point-to-point microwave radio station. The licensed location was listed as Telegraph Pass, Arizona, near Welton, but the microwave station was installed at the KUKY studio in Yuma, about 15 miles from the licensed location. In January 2010, the San Diego office issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture for $4,000 to Gila for failing to operate the relay and its authorized location and for providing a current carrier service not in accordance with the rules applicable to its particular radio service. In its response, Gila had not disputed the facts. However, it asked for a reduction because it said there were no interference reports from other licensees, nor any substantial potential for interference from other users. This is based on the sparsely populated desert terrain. But the FCC was not persuaded by this argument. It noted that the absence of public harm is not considered a mitigating factor in a rule violation. However, the agency did give Gila a break based on the company's past good behavior, noting that the company has not received a prior violation during its more than 20-year history. And that's why it cut the fine by $800. I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD.
They were given the customary 30 days to pay the fine or to file a further appeal.
Bob DiMattia, K1IW, of the Marathon Amateur Radio Communications Group, tells Amateur Radio Newsline that his organization is still looking for approximately 50 more volunteers. This is to help on the ham radio team at the Boston Marathon. This year's run takes place Monday, April 16. Bob says positions are available in Hoppington along the route and in Boston itself. If you're a ham living in that area or plan to be at the event and you're interested in volunteering, please visit mark.mmra.org on the World Wide Web.
Arcadia Publishing is set to release Bay Area Radio, detailing the key events and history of radio in the San Francisco Bay Area. The book highlights some of the area's early events, including Charles Doc Harrell's broadcasts in 1909 from his radio school in San Jose to a young NBC settling its West Coast headquarters in 1926. Bay Area Radio was written by noted radio historian John F. Schneider, with assistance from the California Historical Radio Society and the Bay Area Radio Museum. It goes on sale March 5th.
And A Dot of Butter and a Dash of Spice is a new cookbook dedicated to field day culinary delights from UK amateur Steve Norman, M0MVB. In explaining his new book, Norman says that, as we all need to eat, he has combined his love of doing field day and of food by writing a barbecue book aimed at the ham radio operator. A Dot of Butter and a Dash of Spice contains over 100 recipes, as well as covering what is the best barbecue to take on field days and loads of other help. Priced at just under 10 British pounds or $15.75 in U.S. dollars, it can be ordered online in the United States from Amazon.com and other booksellers.
Some names in the news. First up is Ben Russell, N6SL. He says via the Quarter Century Wireless Association's remailer that to encourage more participation, the 40-meter QCWA 40-meter CWNet has the code speed reduced to approximately 15 words per minute. Russell, who is the net control station, says this net meets every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on 7.035 megahertz plus or minus any QRM. Anyone interested in QCWA and its activities is invited to take part.
Jim Laporta, N1CC of Marbank, Texas, has been selected as the new general manager of the Quarter Century Wireless Association. He'll assume that position on or about March 26th. Laporta replaces Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD, who will be terminating his current contract as general manager on March 31 after 7 years in that position. And a big happy birthday shout-out to the rec.radio.amateur.moderated Usenet news group, which will be 5 years old this month. The group was founded on February 22, 2007. It was created as a moderated alternative to the chaotic problems on many of the unmoderated news groups of the time. Since then, it's become a model that other hobby radio news groups are attempting to emulate. If you haven't participated on Usenet in a while, you might want to take a look at rec.radio.amateur.moderated. It's quite a bit more mature than other hobby groups in the Usenet genre. As an aside, Amateur Radio Newsline's been distributed on this site almost since that news group was formed, and we hope that we helped in some way in the group's long-term success. Hams are invited to take part in the South Africa Radio League-sponsored Leap Year Challenge. That's on Wednesday, February 29. The challenge starts at 00:01 and ends at 23:59 South Africa time. Modes acceptable include phone, CW, and digital activity. On all bands including HF, VHF, UHF, and microwaves, the objective is simply to make as many contacts as you can on this day. The rules permit you to work a station only once, regardless of band, mode, or call sign. Logs go by email to ZS4BFN at netactive.co.za and must be received by midnight Friday, March 2, 2012. A South Africa Radio League membership's up for grabs for the log received with the most QSOs made. Also, this reminder, if you do not take part, you'll have to wait until 2016 to put the date February 29 into your logbook again.
This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. From the United States of America, we are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. Ever found yourself without a signal and wished you could just spray one on like magic? Soon you may be able to do just that. Michael Grebert, N4OZ, is here with more.
Chamtech Enterprises of Sandy, Utah, has developed a spray-on antenna material that it says is more lightweight and energy efficient than current technology. revealed at Google's inaugural Solve for X symposium, the company says that an antenna can be painted onto almost any surface, including trees, walls, and even fabrics. Chamtech says that it is already talking with government-based customers, and as such, can't give too much detail on how it works. However, it has released information that its material uses organic elements that have the ability to interact with magnetic and radio frequency fields. The company's chief technology officer is Rhett Spencer. Spencer is quoted as saying the antenna could increase mobile energy efficiency by 10%. Also, that it was found to work particularly well underwater. Observers at the event say that being organic could make it ideal for sub-aquatic telecommunications infrastructure. Preliminary tests on a current generation cell phone showed that the product was able to boost signals by an impressive 20 dBm when painted over the standard internal antenna. From our point of view, for ham radio operators living in antenna-restricted areas such as apartments or condominiums, the possibilities of a product such as this could be endless. All a ham might need is a bit of imagination and some of the spray-on antenna paint to get on the air with a signal much stronger than from the rubber ducky on his or her HT. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Michael Griebert. November 4, Oscar Zulu, not far from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee.
For more information about the Chamtech spray-on antenna material, you can take your web browser to www.chamtechhops, that's chamtechhops.com. A video with a talk about the technology involved is online at tinyurl.com/spray-on-antenna.
The maiden voyage of the European Space Agency's new Vega launch vehicle has successfully lofted a research satellite along with 8 student-built microsats into space. The first Vega launch took place from the ESA spaceport in Kourou, French Guiana, at 1000 hours UTC Monday, February 13. The primary payload was the Italian Space Agency's Laser Relativity spacecraft. Its primary mission is the measurement of the lens thiring effect, also known as frame dragging. You're all familiar with that. The secondary payload of the 8 student-built microsats will transmit telemetry in the VHF, UHF, and microwave amateur bands. One of the tiny birds, named PWSAT, includes a voice repeater in addition to its telemetry transponder. Its uplinks at 435.020 MHz, downlink at 145.900 MHz. PWSAT sends its telemetry using 1200 baud packet as well as CW on 435.020 MHz.
Russia is blaming solar radiation for a computer glitch that doomed its Phobos Grunt Mars moon mission. But space industry experts cast doubt on the findings of an investigation into the crash of what was to be Moscow's first deep space mission in 2 decades. Amateur Radio Newsline's Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, reports.
The Phobos Grunt spacecraft was stranded in Earth orbit after launch in November and crashed into the Pacific Ocean in January. Russian Space Agency Chief Vladimir Popkin said that, in the opinion of the commission, the most likely reason for the mishap was the local impact of heavily charged space particles that led to a failure in the memory of the main onboard computer in the second stage of flight. Popkin went on to say that foreign-made counterfeit or defective microchips were partly to blame for the failure of the $165 million spacecraft designed to retrieve soil samples from the Martian moon Phobos. He said that a burst of space radiation caused the onboard computers to reboot and go into standby mode. But others doubt this to be the case. Rather, experts on spaceflight say that Moscow was blaming external factors for the loss of its ambitious Mars mission to distract from chronic failings with its once pioneering industry. Alexander Zakharov was the mission's lead scientist. He has been quoted as saying that even if it was true, which cannot be completely ruled out because it does happen, then there is some kind of problem with the flight system or the programming, which were not designed to guard against space radiation. Another space industry source said potentially damaging bursts of radiation were highly unlikely in low Earth orbit, where hundreds of satellites circle within the protective bubble of the planet's magnetic field. But Russia's state news agency has cited an industry source of its own. That unnamed source inferred that the critics are incorrect. It was absurd to think that the Phobos Grunt had not been made to withstand cosmic rays on its 2-year interplanetary mission. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK in Zion, Illinois.
The failure of the Phobos Grunt spacecraft to leave Earth orbit was the latest in a series of mishaps that have plagued Russia's space program this past year.
Radio Australia may broadcast again from Fiji. Andy Sennett reports via the Media Network blog that Fiji's coup-installed military government has signaled it is looking at allowing Radio Australia to broadcast inside the country again. Power to the two transmitters, one in Nadi, the other in Suva, was switched off by the interim government in 2009, 3 years after the 2006 coup led by a military commander. But Fiji's permanent Secretary of Information, Sharon Smith-Johns, told the Pacific Beat's Geraldine Coutts that she's looking at reversing the policy.
NDX, Albania will be on the air during the 2012 CQWPX SSB contest. This with word that TA-1HZ will operate from that nation as ZA-1TC for the period March 23 to the 26th. And that includes the contest weekend. During his spare time outside the contest, he'll try to work some PSK-31, especially on 30 meters. Details and QSL info at www.qrz.com. And lastly, HA-5PP will be active from Malta as 9H-3PP on May 26th and 27th during the CQ Worldwide WPX-CW contest as a single operator, single band entry. Activity outside of the contest will be on 6 and 12 meters and possibly 17 meters as well. QSL via HA-5PP.
And finally this week, a tale of frequency coordination to the stars. Not the stars in the sky, but those on the football field at this year's Super Bowl. It's also the story of the part played in the process by a number of Hoosier State radio amateurs. Here's Jack Parker, W8ISH.
Check 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Indianapolis been a great host of the Super Bowl.
I've just gone from hotel room to stadium.
It was a great experience overall.
From mic checks to Manning to Madonna to the man on the street, the airwaves around downtown Indianapolis were full of frequencies from over 3,500 transmitters. For 2 weeks prior to Super Bowl 46 and through the game itself, hundreds of radio and television stations were vying for radio spectrum in their efforts to cover the greatest show in professional football. Keeping interference to a minimum is the job of the Super Bowl Frequency Coordination Committee. It's a team of 46, including 17 amateur radio operators from central Indiana. Their mission was to log, tag, and tune all wireless transmitters from broadcast media from around the world. As Super Bowl Sunday approached, the job of preventing interference became a super task. The Indianapolis Super Bowl Village, Lucas Oil Stadium, and the major hotels are all located in a one-mile square area in downtown Indianapolis. According to one volunteer, that is a lot of RF in a small area. According to organizers, the area frequency control was expanded on game day, stretching out about 30 miles into the suburbs of central Indiana. The bottom line for all this effort was to make sure the radio transmitters to each quarterback on the field was interference-free throughout Super Bowl 46.
Check 1, 2, 2. Everyone's good.
Reporting from Indianapolis, I'm Jack Parker, W8ISH.
Radio frequency coordination has become an important part of many broadcast sports, but few other than the Olympics require the amount of spectrum, as does the Super Bowl each year. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, the CGC Communicator, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, and Australia's WIA News, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, and it's at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF at the editor's desk, I'm Jeff Clark, K8JAC.
And I'm Jim Dameron, N8TMW, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2012, all rights reserved.